Development, welcome, and picking up on the admonition of my good colleague Senator Walker and the other committee I serve is, if you have a cell phone, please turn it off, and we'll begin today's agenda. We've got some exciting things the committee's going to hear today, and I appreciate the people that have taken the time to come and make those presentations on some very important piece of legislation that we'll be hearing. Senator Starr is not here today, colleagues, this afternoon, so we have the quorum. So I want to begin by doing our committee introduction. So open a work session on committee measures, and Jana, if you tell us what they are, that'd be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. LC 3170 is requested by the Oregon Society of CPAs. And it has to do with the practice of accountancy for a licensee from another state. And LC 2651, requested by the Horsemen's Benevolent and Protective Association, about requiring cash voucher accounts.
Okay, so the chair would entertain a motion that those two LCs be introduced as committee bills.
Mr. Chair, I move that we introduce LC 2651 and 3170, introduce them as committee bills.
Okay, thank you. Senator Montes Anderson has moved LC 2651 and 3170 as committee bills. Any objection? So ordered. Okay. Now I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bills 579, 580, and 581, and to kick it off, our colleague, Senator Ryan Decker. And bring your first panel with you as well. And I'd like to do is, Janet, if you would give us the brief overview of the three bills before us.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 579 expands the definition of emerging growth business for the purposes of what is allowed as an investment from the Oregon Growth Account. It includes in the definition individuals or groups, as well as the current new or small partnerships, limited liability companies, corporations, or firms. It also deletes a restriction that the investments must go to businesses within traded sector industries. It also allows an earlier investment in a startup that then is currently allowed under the existing statute. Mr. Chair, the Oregon Growth Account was created with the Education Stability Fund and is a subaccount in that fund by the 1995 Legislative Assembly. It does receive lottery proceeds, and that's the source of its money. Senate Bill 580 would require the Oregon Innovation Council to establish two additional signature research centers, one for development of the bioeconomy and sustainable technology, and the other for drug development and commercialization. And Senate Bill 581, which has a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee, would allocate funds to the Oregon Innovation Council from the Administrative Services Economic Development Fund, which are lottery revenues, for the next biennium. And this bill and the staff measure summary list the amounts that go to each of the programs. These projects were recommended by the Oregon Innovation Council, which was created by the 2005 Legislative Assembly. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. And a person from our body who worked very hard on that, Senator Deckert, and here to lead off the discussion today. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Y'all look great. It's interesting to not be up on the panel. You look very good up there, and it's interesting to be in the audience. Very dignified. Mr. Chair,
it changes when you come up here.
You vote no now.
So it just takes a few votes to become honorable.
Well, now, Mr. Chair, what was that? What did that mean?
You opened yourself up for that one.
I did. Yeah, I did.
Off to the best start.
Mr. Chair, Ryan Deckert, State Senator from Beaverton, thank you for hearing this, and I'm not going to get into too many of the details because seated behind me are a group of Oregonians, CEOs of our largest manufacturers, executives and managing partners of our biggest venture capital firms, folks from academia, our economic development department, and really the private sector leadership in many facets, from traditional industries to emerging industries of the state. And they have spent countless hours, paid nothing, seated in rooms. And I remember one room in August where a group of them actually a couple seated right there, at 3 o'clock, and they'd been there since 9 a.m. vetting proposals for the state in terms of the innovation economy. It reminded me, I watched Mitt Romney, who's running for president.
Who is it?
Mitt Romney.
I said, who isn't running for president?
And without getting into the current presidential race, which starts earlier and earlier, I noticed that he had it at the Henry Ford Museum and talked about the great history in this country and who we are. One word sums it up, and that is innovation. If there's anything that is the hallmark of our success, and the last century being the undoubtedly the American century, it really, Mitt Romney was right, or Governor Romney, innovation has been in the heart of it. Land, labor, other costs obviously vary in whether there are competitive advantages, but we are a people and a state that has been able to innovate, and so that is the central thesis of the Oregon Innovation Council, and we think we bring you today a exciting package that for the first time in this state's history, instead of coming from 9 or 10 different places, it will be one voice for economic development and for innovation. And this is our first stop. We've been at it for 2 years, working hard in rooms, and so if we're a little bit excited about our product, it is only because so many Oregonians have worked so tirelessly when they had other important jobs that they were to attend to, developing these ideas that are included in the governor's budget. So thank you to my colleagues for creating this council and for hearing our work.
Thank you very much, Senator. Welcome, Mr. Esselman.
Senator Metzger, for the record, my name is Jack Esselman of Tonkin Torp. I am appearing today on behalf of the Software Association of Oregon. The Software Association of Oregon, or SAO, is Oregon's largest locally headquartered technology trade association with nearly 600 member companies of all sizes. We have a fundamental commitment at the Software Association of Oregon in creating a high-quality economic environment in which software-dependent organizations can be established, grow, and prosper. And in fact, our mission statement is summed up in three simple words: start, move, and grow. And what that means is we have a fundamental commitment to ensuring that we can create an ecosystem in Oregon where software-dependent organizations start here, are open to relocating here and expanding here, and ultimately are willing, whether they are grown from scratch here or are recruited here, are ultimately committed to grow in Oregon. We just completed an economic impact study, which has been shared, I believe, with each of you on the committee in separate briefings, and I won't go into many of the details other than to say employment in the 10 software and computer-related fields we analyzed is expected to grow by 18.7% through 2014, and that's faster than the overall employment growth rate across all occupations in Oregon for the same time period. And only these 10 professions and healthcare related professions are anticipated, according to our study, to have more new openings compared to replacement openings than other professions. So they will have more independent organic growth. That study was completed for us by the consulting firm of Eco Northwest. To the bill, Senate Bill 579 addresses a concern that many in this room have articulated, which is access to capital for startup businesses in Oregon. According to a study by Venture One and Ernst & Young, which track venture capital investments across the country, nationwide venture capital investment increased in 2006 by 8.2% over 2005, a total of $25 billion was invested in venture capital across the country. In Oregon, however, we appear to be missing out on this upswing in investment. In 2006, venture investing dropped in Oregon by nearly 39% from 2005 levels. Per capita, Oregon draws venture capital at one-third the national average. There are many reasons for this, many factors, and certainly the group assembled behind us is far more knowledgeable and articulate on these matters, and I will have them address those in turn. The Software Association of Oregon strongly endorses this clarification, really, of the goals of the Oregon Growth Account so that capital can reach the most important and primary potential job creators in our state. So with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Embry.
Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Wayne Embry, managing partner of Cascadia Partners, an early-stage venture fund headquartered in Portland. We've been making seed-stage investments in Oregon and the Northwest for the last 20 years, and about 60% of our investments are based on technologies out of research institutions. So we've been focused at the very earliest stages of technology development. And I want to comment on Senate Bill 579 and the important changes, and these are relatively minor changes, but the important changes it makes is it takes the Oregon Growth Account and that money back to some of its original intention, which is to focus on innovation. Oregon's done the right things over the last decade, focusing on bringing more competitive research into the research institutions, the fairly dramatic growth at both OHSU and Oregon State in fundamental research and competitive head-to-head research. But one of the things where we've fallen short is the ability to then convert that R&D into viable technologies and companies anchored here in Oregon. A way to look at it, using some of the numbers that Mr. Isselman provided, Oregon has about 32 cents in venture capital for every dollar in R&D at the research institutions. The Bay Area has $6.25. So when we talk about the ability to fund innovation, that's the fundamental difference right there. And we're talking about money that's actually invested, not in the hands of the venture capitalists themselves, but the money that's actually invested in the region. So I believe that the changes we're talking about with SB 579 will be instrumental in helping move Oregon closer to the ability to capture this, the ideas coming out of the research institutions and the laboratories, and then turn them into viable technologies and companies anchored here in Oregon.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for this panel at this point? I have one, just kind of kicking off the overall thought here. As you know, the Oregon Growth Account is a product of the Education Stability Fund. The Education Stability Fund is our reserve to fund our schools, and so always has to be invested very wisely. It's not, it is separate and distinct from other economic investment activities in how it's viewed, in that we want this less risky because it has to fund it. And I'd just be curious for Senator Eckert or anyone else about, as we look at expanding this to emerging growth businesses, some people might translate that into riskier businesses in which are less or more at risk to having that capital returned. Anybody want to just kind of comment on that? Because I think that will be something that people need to have a certain comfort level at.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my firm managed the original creation or the original idea of what has become the Oregon Growth Account. It's called the Oregon Resource and Technology Development Corporation, dating back to the 85 Assembly. And again, as I told you, we've focused on very early stage opportunities. Those funds produced returns that were in the top quartile, the first and second quartile for returns for all funds in North America for those vintage years. And I'd be happy if you'd like to share those data with you. But we invested in companies like ADI Biopharma, FEI, Radisys, and a number of other companies that make significant economic contribution but also significant financial return.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the only point I'd add is I believe the intent behind the bill is not to in any way substantially alter the risk profile of the portfolio held by the growth account, but rather the language is designed, I think, to modernize the criteria and the definitions governing the account to recognize that at times there will be investments made perhaps not in a product or a process, as is currently in the statute, but a raw technology. Also, investments, while they may be made in more traditional types of management companies like corporations or other investment companies, it could just be a cluster of individuals or single individuals. And so I think it's the, in part the changes are designed to reflect some of the dynamism that we're seeing out there in the technology transfer landscape and to make sure that the fund is able to address those needs within its charter.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator George and then Senator Montesano.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could, that actually brought up some questions in my mind. Why is it that Oregon isn't drawing more private sector money? It seems like to me that whatever monies we allocate here is going to be a pittance compared to the venture capital money, direct investment money that could possibly be out there. Could you possibly enlighten us a little bit about perhaps why we're not drawing anywhere near what some of the other parts of the country are, and why isn't this being done in the private sector?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator George, it is, in fact, being done by the private sector, and just a more detailed explanation would take longer than we have here, but the venture business has, especially since the burst of the internet bubble in 2000-2001 time frame, the venture capital business has moved to increasingly later stage investments, and so a lot of the opportunities that we're seeing with many of our initiatives such as Onami and some of the other things that you'll hear here from other witnesses for other bills require a little more maturing to them before they are ready for institutional private sector money. So getting the technology turned into a product, understanding what market that product will serve. And those are the things where the venture business is now more interested in companies, understanding the market already and seeing it as a finished product. This money, even though it's relatively small, will be critical in helping make that transition from a technology to a product that a more established institutional investor would recognize and feel comfortable investing in.
If I can follow up quickly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It kind of gets back to what Senator Metzger was asking. I guess this is where I need you to fill in some blanks for me. Then it would seem that what we're investing in here are things that are higher risk than the private sector would be willing to take on. And I guess that's what Senator Metzger was talking about. I just kind of wonder if you could kind of fill us in why that's good public policy.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, Senator George. There's actually a lot of misconceptions about the risk of early stage technologies versus later stage. There's actually a gentleman that teaches at Willamette University that studies this area in depth and has a lot of data on it. The early stage investments actually return the highest return on capital of any other form of private equity. However, because they're typically smaller investments, it's harder for large institutional investments to put much money behind that particular part of the asset class. So it's smaller funded. But from a failure rate perspective, the failure rate of very early stage isn't really that much different than later stage investments.
Thank you.
Senator Moss,
thank you. I appreciate the groups that are coming in and informing me about this, but I noticed in the bill that you have added the word technology, and so we're adding the word technology, and can you explain to me what businesses would come into that this seed money could be used to that wouldn't have been able to participate in this without the word technology? Just describe a little bit about what technology means there.
You want me to take it?
Sure.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Montes Anderson, I would defer to the drafts persons on the bill who are from the Economic Development Department, but it is my understanding. The idea with including the word technology in there is that increasingly in research, the research that gets funded both privately and at the federal level and then ultimately invested in by a private venture capitalist. Certain technology areas get analyzed and developed and funded where they will ultimately lead to products and processes and innovations. But there's actually an opportunity to invest at an earlier stage when the technology is a more nascent raw form and has not yet been applied to individual applications. And the idea is here just to allow the growth account board would still oversee all investments, but give them the ability in their discretion to examine investments in a given technology field. And I think from the venture capital side, Mr. Embry may be able to address how venture capitalists tend to target certain technology areas. And I think that was the part of the intent here.
Follow up. Mm-hmm. I guess it would help me a little bit if you could give me some examples.
Yeah.
I think, you know, a good way to look at this are some of the functional areas that the legislature and the state are currently funding. So ONAMI is a good example. And then also one of the proposed research initiatives, research centers of TRADI. So ONAMI has applications across a broad range of industries. Nanotechnology by itself is not an industry, but the technology wrapped around nanotechnology is applicable to a broad range of industries. So it's applicable to basic manufacturing. It's applicable to the electronics industry. It's applicable to the medical industry. And so in many cases, as a venture capitalist, we see things which are, for example, high technology coatings. And those coatings can be applied to every one of those industries and improve the products and the processes. So I think from the point of view of, you know, where Oregon's placing some bets and some fairly sizable dollars right now, this gives us the ability as a state, and I think the Oregon Growth Account specifically, to be much more responsive to competitive opportunities and competitive pressures in a global marketplace by including, you know, this relatively minor language change in this bill. The ability to respond to technology opportunities as opposed to waiting until things are fully developed in a marketplace is too late at that point. So this allows us to capitalize on money that's being well spent in programs like ONAMI and hopefully OTRADI as well.
So just clarification. So I'm just wanting to be sure that this money is actually going to go into emerging ideas, but it wouldn't be going to, say, fund actually ONAMI as an organization and OTRADI as an organization.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Mons Anderson, that's exactly my understanding. I'm a committee chair of Oregon Inc., and that has been a topic of discussion many times to make clear that there are going to be divisions between where money is spent and allocation of resources. So, no, this is not designed to be money going in and funding operations or internal activities associated with some of those entities and programs, but really to be focused on capturing the ideas and turning them into businesses here.
Mr. Chair, just one addition. The National Governors Association is meeting this weekend. This is the model language for Oregon. Obviously, it's the OGA, other states, and we frankly, with the package that we have today, we'll put ourselves at the front of the line rather than the back of the line that we were 4 or 5 years ago, quickly to the front. But this will be, you will see this replicated in other states, this model language of how you commercialize, and your questions are right on, Senator Moss Anderson, to ensure that those walls from funding ONAMI and leveraging that private and federal dollars to actually using your growth account, which would not be the appropriate way to do it.
Senator Starr?
Thank you. I have what I think is a relatively simple question, but a question nonetheless. In the bill, Senate Bill 579, specifically striking references to traded sector industries and specifically striking the statute that defines traded sector, what's the rationale for doing that? Seems like, you know, that's what we've all talked about for so many years is traded sector industries, and all of a sudden we're taking that out of the statute.
Let me take it. Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Senator Scar. When I actually went to you're right, when I first got the bill summary and it popped up and I didn't know it was one of the Oregon Inc. bills, I said, oh man, well, we can't go for this. This is taking us in the wrong direction. But I think really what this is designed to do, my understanding of it is at this stage of investing, by its very nature, these types of technological investments are if they're going to emerge as the way, in the way we hope, and be commercialized technologies and be full-blown companies making products, they will by their nature be traded sector. They may or may not be traded sector at the moment that the Oregon Growth Account Board is considering an investment. And in fact, I believe the history of the growth account investments were reviewed and questions were asked, well, why did you make certain investments and not others? And I don't want to speak for the growth account. There's representatives from the Treasurer's Office here today. But my understanding is that this became more of an unnecessary limiter because, in point of fact, the goal of almost any investment the growth account is going to make is going to be to create a traded sector business by its very nature. So in a sense, it was redundant and could possibly be a gating item. I don't think this would open it up to non-traded sector investments, for example, in retail businesses or the like. So I think on the other side, there's still adequate protection there that this does not alter the intent of the growth account to invest in emerging growth businesses. But the traded sector industry language, I believe, was viewed as an unnecessary delimiter within the statute. So there was a desire to clean it up, I think is the answer.
And Mr. Chair, I would only add to a very good question that the folks in the room would be the ones, in terms of drafting this and deliberating over it, would be the ones that I think you hear most consistently and ardently, and they're behind me, traded sector. So they would had the same disposition that you have, Senator Starr, of that's what we're doing. We're traded sector. We're focusing and getting it into our nomenclature. So I can assure you that there is no weakness in terms of that focus.
Mr. Chair, just to respond, I mean, I can appreciate Senator Decker that conversation, and yet we're taking it out of the statute. So, you're asking the legislature to basically say, trust us, we all know what we mean, and we mean traded sector, but we're not going to have it in black and white in the statute anymore. But, I've had a lot of conversations in the last couple of days about this particular set of bills, and this is the first time that I recognize that particular piece is coming out. And I'm not sure that the explanation warrants us removing that from the statute, because I think that is pretty critical that we have it in black and white, and it's not just, trust us, because, the next legislature coming down the line 5 or 6 or 8 years from now, they may not remember this conversation.
I don't know that it'd be a problem to keep it in there.
All right, we'll consider it. Thank you. Senator Deckert, would you like to introduce Mr. Chen, who has arrived since we came, and then we'll move on to another panel.
Yes, I would.
Is Waller coming up also?
So our leader is on his way up. He is with OBB Partner, the managing partner, and has been, as I think Duncan Wise said, one of the incredible finds in Oregon is Dave Chen, and he's given so many hours. All the folks that you see behind me have no financial interest. So many of the folks that come before us with financial packages with them, actually, it goes somehow to their industry. And Dave, because I think he loves the state and cares about it, has just given up his time, and I don't want to even try to quantify how many hours he's given to the state to help lead this process. And he succeeded Alan Alley and has done, produced. He's the producer of the show, and I think it's a product that will really elevate us. We always look at Arizona as the leader in the country at this, and right now, with the passage of this agenda, I think we'll be right there with Arizona in terms of the innovation economy.
Mr. Chen, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Deckard, for that those very kind remarks. Chairman, Senators, it's my pleasure to address you today. My name is David Chen, and I'll be addressing you today as the Chairman of the Oregon Innovation Council, as well as I am also a partner at OVP Venture Partners, a 25-year-old partnership that primarily invests in early-stage ventures here in the Pacific Northwest. Before I start my remarks, I sat back there and I apologize for the rotations that we're going through the building today, and so I was late. If I may address maybe the questions that you asked that you didn't direct towards me, but we're doing things a little bit backwards because of that schedule. We actually drilled into one of the bills, and as opposed to sort of the overarching objectives, but since we drilled in, I thought I'd actually maybe answer a few of the questions. The purpose of Senate Bill 579, which is the OGA bill, really is in many ways quite simple. It's OGA's recognition. It is also the Oregon Innovation Council's recognition that one of the artifacts or outputs of us creating successful research and development in this community, both within the university systems, between the signature research centers, the signature research centers that in fact we're going to invest in, such as BEST and Otrati, and the one that we have already invested in with regard to Onami, is that we are in fact creating research that is in fact highly attractive for commercialization. And in almost each one of these organizations, they are putting forth plans to create what are being called accelerator funds, which are, in fact, to address Chairman Metzger's question and also Senator George's question about risk, is, in fact, directed at managing the risk of very early-stage technologies that are being converted into companies. And how do you escort them across that? How do you put the right amount of management expertise into them? And so these accelerator vehicles, which are in fact themselves funds, are being offered up. And I think what one of the reasons for the redrafting of the OGA charter and mandate is in fact to be able to allow them to do exactly that, which is to invest in those vehicles which take great advantage of the result of our success, which is more commercializable R&D, and to be able to manage the risk of very early stage technologies into the formation of companies. To answer another question, these are absolutely investments in companies and not in funds. Fund managers, venture fund managers, or venture fund-like vehicles like these accelerators, and they are not another way of funding the programs themselves. These are absolutely targeted companies. The last part about this with regard to traded sector, maybe the more appropriate word is yet to be new traded sectors. That is not traditional traded sectors of this community. For example, infectious diseases, for example, in the Onami situation, advanced materials, in the Onami situation, energy systems, and energy sustainability systems, things like cellulosic conversion. So these are not historic traded sectors of this community, but we believe that, in fact, because of the research and the strength of the research, that, in fact, they are toeholds onto that. So thank you for that indulgence.
No, thank you.
Stepping way back again and starting at the high level, the Oregon Innovation Council was put into place in 2005 through many of the folks in this room through legislation, and we actually stood this up in the Q4 of 05. And when we started, it seemed like an incredibly daunting task, and that was to put forth to the Senate and to the representatives, to the committees, and to the governor a orchestrated plan for how we jumpstart Oregon's next economies, next innovation economies. And there were a number of rules or beliefs that we built into that process. Number one, if you were in my shoes, you'd say that was an incredibly daunting task, and how do we boil the ocean to create these ideas? So we set about really putting out some ground rules. Number one, what we wanted to do was not, even though it's our state slogan, we don't want to be dreamers. What we want to do is to find opportunities where Oregon has some indigenous advantage, some critical mass of advantage, and where we have the opportunity that if we work together collaboratively around some very defined initiatives, we have the opportunity to serve a growing marketplace. So built into that was the concept of growth, It built into that was the concept of where we had some strength to offer up that allowed us to get there. The second thing was collaborative. These were initiatives and proposals that we asked for that did not come from any individual company or any individual institutions. They had to show where by pulling our resources together across private sector, public sector, companies, and our research institutions as well as agencies, we can in fact achieve something very, very significant. Third, it had to have impact across a broad cut of Oregon. This is both in terms of the kinds of jobs. It is also in terms of the economic impact, both on rural as well as urban. And at the heart and the genesis of it was how do we use kernels of ideas that at the heart of it are talking about innovation that actually benefit across all of Oregon. Four is in many ways a charter that you all gave us in that legislation, which is bring the pieces together. We have many, many organizations. We have many, many initiatives. We have many, many agencies. And how do we bring and align as many of these resources as possible along those lines? And the last thing that we did was we made it a competitive process. Not every proposal was accepted. In fact, well over 25 proposals across the board were reviewed. Many more actually never made it to the council. They were rejected before they got there. And then even those that were accepted were galvanized and mentored through the process. So it was a highly competitive process based on a number of criteria, many of which I've in fact just articulated. Did they bring collaboration? Did we have a chance of succeeding? Was there leadership? Was it truly public and private? And did we have a chance? And then what you had in front of you then is a 11-point plan that articulates a number of enabling factors as well as a number of catalysts that we've then converted into four significant bills that are in front of you. And that is really the genesis of the Oregon Innovation Plan. One of the things that I draw your attention to, and I think this is probably in your packet, but it's a map of the state of Oregon. And I think in many ways this really says it all. This is an overlay of our 11 initiatives onto the economic impact across all of Oregon. And what you'll see is it impacts coastal, it impacts eastern, western, urban, rural, and in meaningful ways. For example, the energy and sustainability initiatives, the wave energy initiatives, are going to meaningfully impact those regions, both across the economic ladder as well as across the regions of Oregon. So with that, I'll open it up for questions, and the next hour or so will be a series of detailed testimonies that really articulate each of the specific initiatives that we have in front of you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions before we go into the individual bills? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All right, Mr. Chin, thank you so much for all your hard work on behalf of folks in the state. I will ask these questions just kind of for general comment and just to kind of maybe... as the watchdog of the taxpayers' money. So I guess one of the things I have as somebody who's fiscally conservative is I'm always concerned about the state picking the winners and the losers. And it seems like to me if we're not drawing venture capital into the state, there may be some structural issues, either tax issues, capital gains taxes, those kind of things, which may be pushing people towards California or Arizona or other places besides maybe $38 million bucks here. If you could explain to me kind of what some of the other things that we could be doing to draw businesses here without necessarily direct subsidies, and then a follow-up to that is explain to me why sort of a direct cash outlay and the state picking the winners and losers is good public policy. If you could just kind of discuss those in general, it'd really help me out.
Sure. Let me take the first question, and that is what other things can be done to attract growth and venture capital? Most certainly tax policy, tax incentives, all those. In fact, we discussed many of those in the work of the Oregon Innovation Council. And the Oregon Innovation Council was actually split into seven working subcommittees where we basically divided up the set of issues and actually had committees of dedicated individuals, again, working with expertise on those. And in fact, a number of those tax policy, investment credit issues were discussed. And the result of it, and this was investors both from private equity side as well as early stage venture, came to the conclusion that many of those, although important, were maybe not the most important influencers. I'll tell you, the answer to your question, it may seem so simple and it reflects maybe my prejudices, but the way to attract venture and investment dollars isn't really all that different from your own personal investment probably thinking. And that is, you're trying to invest in good opportunities and what seems to be attractive. And so the thing that we can actually do, I think, that most makes a difference is really twofold. One is make sure that we're cultivating deals and industries and markets that are, in fact, in quote-unquote high-growth sectors that are attractive to future investment. And two, something that I don't think we do particularly well in Oregon, and that is make sure that they're known. And I'll tell you, in today's world, money is very fluid. And if you have a hot deal in a hot sector and you become known as a wellspring of those kinds of opportunities, money will beat a path to your door. And then all the other things make a big difference, whether it's enlightened credit policies, research. But at the heart of it, it's about, is it an exciting growth opportunity? And what excites me about the things that we have vetted is that many of these, in fact, play to really those crosshairs of opportunities. Something that we do well or have a reputation for, and something that is, in fact, intersecting growth emerging industries. For example, sustainable energy, renewable energy, community development and sustainability, the wave energy, infectious diseases. These are all growing sectors that we have something that makes us unique in our ability to do that. And so we're not actually picking the actual company winners and losers. And as a matter of public policy, we're not asking the state to actually be a venture capitalist in terms of specific companies. What we're asking is for the support in that these are very, very significant growth sectors, and that the government and the state play a role in helping to build the infrastructure to promote it. And by the way, this goes to other aspects that you traditionally wouldn't think of as innovation centers. For example, organic foods, our processed foods, our bioproducts that come from our natural resources. These are all opportunities to infuse our natural resources with innovation that makes it, no code word here, premium products, export products, globally competitive products. You only need to look at, for example, the change in Oregon agriculture to move from simple commodity to organic, sustainable commodities that in a vicious commodity world allow our farmers and our cooperatives to infuse these new generation products and get another 10 cents a pound or another 20 cents a pound, which in the scheme of those kinds of products is a huge, huge, huge advantage. So what we're not asking as a matter of public policy is for the state. In fact, none of these proposals speak about specific companies. They speak about paving the way for infrastructure, for research, for development, for infrastructure that promotes these very specific recommendations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that we can actually get into these bills now, I'll watch my time closely. I would like to ask the panel coming up, which would be a portion of 581, the Wave Energy Group, Justin, David, and Kevin, going to come forward. This is a portion of recommendations in Senate Bill 581 for members. And just, can I have this for a second, Janet? There was a reference to the packet. The members actually were given the packet in their offices, but they don't have it here other than myself. So just if you make a reference to that, we don't have them handy here other than the one copy. Please, welcome.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Kluwer. I'm a senior policy analyst with the Oregon Department of Energy. Been involved in the development of wave energy for the last 2 years or so, leading a group of stakeholders to talk about a lot of the issues around wave energy and its development. To my left is Kevin Bannister, Vice President of Business Development for Finnevera Renewables, one of the ocean energy companies that has come to Oregon, recently sited its headquarters in Portland, based a lot on the momentum around this industry and what you find in the Oregon Innovation Proposal. To my right is David Gibson. He is the Renewable Program Manager with Oregon Ironworks, and Oregon Ironworks is a leader in metals fabrication across a variety of sectors. what I'd like to do here is first say that we're here in support of the entire Oregon Innovation Package. We're going to talk briefly here over the next few minutes about wave energy specifically, and I would like to give you a brief background on the technology, what it looks like, and where we've come to date, and then turn it over to my colleagues to get into some of the details on how they envision themselves deploying projects and the technology. Just quickly, when we're talking about wave energy, we're actually referring to converting the linear motion of the ocean waves into electricity. There are a variety of other hydrokinetic discussions, in-stream tidal, for example, and other forms to generate electricity from. But what we're talking about here today is wave energy, and that's really the resource that Oregon is best suited to develop. Stakeholders, like I had mentioned, have been having these conversations about wave energy for about 2 years through a stakeholder group called the Power Group. This group has been essentially a forum for information exchange on environmental issues, possible ocean use conflicts, regulatory challenges, and also been looking at how to finance both research facilities and commercial projects to prove the technology's viability. So these discussions have been going on for quite some time, and we're now at a point I think where we're actually seeing some real projects happening. I'd also like to recognize that this industry sees the need and acknowledges the need for applied research, and we've got a tremendous resource at the Oregon State University. They are basically working on the next best technology for this industry, and their facilities, the Motor Systems Research Facility and the OHS Hinsdale Research Wave Research Lab is going to be critical in moving this industry forward. There are technologies today that are ready to deploy. They are hovering around 30% efficient when you're talking about converting that energy in the waves, and the technologies housed at OSU are looking at 80 to 90% efficient. Not yet commercially proven, but that's the kind of work that we're looking at as far as the technological leaps for potential. Real quickly, I'd like to speak on why Oregon is so uniquely poised to take advantage of wave energy. You know, why does it make sense? What's our competitive advantage? First, it's the wave resource. Oregon has some of the best wave climate in the country, in the world for that matter. Second, there's tremendous transmission infrastructure to connect these wave parks to the utility grid. And in addition, there is port capacity along Oregon coast to build, manufacture, deploy these technologies. Secondly, like I mentioned, the facilities at Oregon State University that are going to help guide the next technology, as well as be able to test new devices in the ocean climate. Third, I would say just the need for energy resources and the need and demand for renewable energy. There's support both in the marketplace and in the halls of government to devise policies that encourage the development of renewable energies and the associated benefits both economically and environmentally with such. And then finally, just the expertise that Oregon has in its marine industry community, fishermen and others that have the understanding of the marine climate and taking advantage of those while diversifying local economies. There are a lot of exciting things that I've just mentioned about this industry. There are also some significant challenges that are left to hash out, and that's essentially what's at the heart of the Oregon Innovation Council proposal. Those challenges, first, is the higher cost of electricity for these technologies, and embedded in the proposal is a production incentive that looks at addressing this issue. In addition, the permitting roadmap, although it has begun to take shape, there are still some significant issues in identifying the ecological effects of wave energy, and that's going to take partnership between local, state, and federal governments. A statewide environmental assessment is needed to identify how these wave parks would interact with each other, assuming that there's more than one of these as the industry matures. And most importantly, I would say, making sure that this industry does not displace current marine use. That's a critical component and something we're working very diligently in doing. And you'll hear a little bit more about how we're dealing with that in the proposal from my colleagues. Finally, to wrap up, I'd just like to share a quick story with you about the wind industry. The wind industry was at a very similar point that Wave was about 20 years ago. And it was Denmark who invested significant capital as a country into the industry. And they did it a little bit differently than what we're proposing. Essentially, what they did is warranted the output of wind generators. But they made the investment. They are now the one of the leading countries developing wind industry. The industry represents $60 billion today. A Danish company, Vestas, is responsible for about $20 billion of that revenue and that development, and only about 5% of that is actually in the limits of Denmark. So what we're talking about is the ability to export not only intellectual property but devices as this energy wave energy is developed. Just to wrap up, I think it's a matter of investment and return on investment, and I think the proposal that we have in front of you addresses those issues, and it creates an environment for where companies will come. We're not choosing technologies. We're not trying to determine what technology is going to be best. We're trying to create a nurturing environment for those companies to come and invest in Oregon and be the leader in this industry and grow economies and future jobs. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin. My name is Kevin Bannister, again, with Hoodvera Renewables. We are a device and project development company, so we're doing two things. We're trying to develop projects, and we're doing that around the world, but we're also developing the device technology itself. And like Justin said, we think the real winner here for Oregon is the opportunity for those devices and the intellectual property that's built up around those devices to be exported. There is a great opportunity to actually generate clean and renewable energy off the coast, but the bigger win for Oregon, frankly, is probably the export of the devices and the IP. Also, as Justin mentioned, Finnvera Renewables, the Ocean Energy Division, has decided to move to Oregon, in large part based on the things that, again, Justin mentioned, the natural resources, the competitive advantages of the states, some of the incentive programs that the state has put forward has made this, we think, a good, nurturing, healthy environment in which our industry can grow. So I mentioned that we're developing technologies and developing project sites. We filed a preliminary permit to develop a site off the coast near Bandon. At its build out, we anticipate that will be a 100 megawatt facility. I want to talk a little more about the Oregon Inc. Wave Energy Initiative. One of the key features of that initiative is something called the Oregon Wave Energy Trust. When we came to the state, certainly one of the things that made it so attractive was what we saw as the real collaborative nature of the state, and the manufacturing and metals industry were so enthusiastic for this industry to come here. They welcomed us with open arms. So we thought, okay, that's actually great. But there are more players in this, and it requires more collaboration. So the Wave Energy Trust is a not-for-profit that's been set up that has a broad-based board, which is still in formation, but some of the members of the board actually are here today. I'm actually the president of the board, but it includes coastal representatives, includes the manufacturing sector, will include members from the utility community, and has academia represented, the fishing interests, and, of course, this being an industry-driven process, it has wave energy developers on the board as well. And primarily the goals of the Wave Energy Trust are to promote the industry in Oregon, but to promote the industry in Oregon in a responsible way. Finally, in order to keep this brief, I want to talk a little bit about the progress of the actual industry in the state. And a good way to judge that is really by the activity on the coast. And many of you have probably seen there's been a lot of press about the activity in the wave energy in the coast. There have been six, in fact, preliminary permits filed with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Filing of permits is a good way to gauge an industry's enthusiasm for a location and their optimism about their ability to develop projects. So I think that Oregon should feel good about that. That represents that the industry is coming here. But I would urge your support for Senate Bill 581, because one of the reasons that we are here is based on the promise of the Oregon Inc. Package. So we think it's a very important part.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity today. My name is David Gibson. I'm the Renewable Energy Program Manager for Oregon Ironworks. I am also on the Oregon Wave Energy Trust Board. Oregon Ironworks is a world-class complex metal fabricator and integrator. We serve the hydroelectric, the nuclear, the defense, the aerospace, and the transportation industries, to name a few. We are currently in negotiations with the city of Portland to build a prototype streetcar for Portland, and we will be the first modern streetcar manufacturer in the United States. So we have facilities in Clackamas, Oregon, Vancouver, Washington, and a new facility out on Swan Island for building ocean-going barges. We believe that this is a unique opportunity for Oregon to build wave energy devices and to do a significant portion of that labor out on the coast and provide some economic development to those areas. We are currently in discussions with some of the technology providers, Finnvera Renewables, Ocean Power Delivery, Ocean Power Technology. We're also working with Oregon Department of Energy and Oregon State University to further our efforts to bring ocean wave energy to Oregon. Ocean wave energy is a non-polluting renewable energy that we think has the potential to bring many manufacturing, research, and service jobs to Oregon. And these would be in the area of fabrication, electrical and mechanical integration, assembly, installation, maintenance, research, and design. Oregon Ironworks' business model is to build facilities to support new industries where they are most needed. We see that some of this work would be done probably at the Clackamas facility, but that there would also be requirements for assembly, integration, installation in the coastal communities. Based on the size of these devices, they're very difficult to ship as one piece. And so Oregon Ironworks would like request that you support this entire package and give us the opportunity to bring this this new technology to Oregon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson. Questions for this panel? Senator George.
I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but I'd like to ask a couple questions. I'm very excited about wave energy in the state. Obviously, I sit on a committee. We discuss the activities of Oregon State University in collaboration with you folks, and I think it's we are in a position in the world that very few people are. But that's sort of my that's my point. They don't really have too many places to go. You can't go to Kansas and do this, if you understand what I'm saying. And so we're in a unique position already in a market situation, and we have a lot of people coming to our state. We have the power lines out to the coast already because of our timber industry. We have all of these advantages right now. And so I'm all excited about your industry. I just think it's very exciting, and I think it's going to be a great industry for the state of Oregon. But flip side of that is the request is for a little over $5 million. And if you could explain to me again why this isn't being done in the private sector, and then, if you could, how we on this panel then make sure that that $5 million is then returns back to the state something greater than $5 million that wouldn't happen if we didn't make the investment. And I guess that's really what the point is that your industry is on the cutting edge, and it's exciting, and I'm very supportive. At the same time, private sector investment's pouring into that field right now, and I'm trying to get an idea with our budget situation how this benefits the state, this specific allocation of $5 million. So just if you discuss that for me and then talk about why the private sector can't do this.
I'll take a start. First, I'll separate that $5.25 million just a little. A significant portion of that, almost a little over $2 million, is in the form of a production incentive. So that's something that the state doesn't pay unless we deliver. As wave energy developers, we need to deliver. And part of the reason for that is to create a rationale that makes it that create a market, in a sense, for utilities to buy the power and to support the risks that we're taking as developers while still protecting Oregon's electric consumers. I mean, that's something that's really important. So that's one segment of that $5.25 million. The truth is that there are a lot of regions of the world that have been competing for this wave energy industry to sort of grow its roots. There are great resources in Canada. There are great resources in the United Kingdom. There are great resources in the Spanish Peninsula and in Portugal. You know, when we made a decision as an international publicly traded company, when we made a decision about where to go, we took a look at what incentives they were able to offer. We took a look at the academic environment in those places. The academic environment is a very important thing to us because we need to hire new engineers that the university system is going to spit out. So another piece of this Oregon Inc. package is additional dollars that would be earmarked towards OSU for wave energy research. We think that's great. So it's kind of that package of things that really separated Oregon from the competing regions of the world.
I'd like to add to that, if I may. Without the Oregon Wave Energy Trust, you're going to have Finavera Renewables taking their approach. You're going to have Ocean Power Technology going a different direction. You're going to have Ocean Power Delivery in another area. And this is a way to get everybody to really pull together the technology providers, the research, the manufacturing, and really work together to provide or create an environment that's conducive to taking the lead in wave energy in Oregon.
Okay. Mr. Chair. Okay. Just one of the things that we should have led with, and perhaps we should, because Senator George asked the perfect question, the important question, I think the thread that you will see through all the panels, and perhaps we should have Skip go first with Onami, and maybe we'll do that next time, is the return on investment. Onami is obviously the one marker that we have out there that the state put down a marker a few years back. The promise and the we made would be that it would double the return on investment. For every dollar, we'd do two. Now our experience with Onami is for every dollar the state puts in, we're getting 10 in federal and private leverage. And that is the story that we'll tell. Unfortunately, Skip's up last to talk about our first marker, but you'll hear that thread throughout the initiatives is the state puts a little and it leverages what we think hopefully will underpromise and overdeliver like Onami in terms of private sector growth from these initiatives.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bannister, it's a Vancouver, BC company who's got wave energy projects all around the world, from Portugal to Canada to South Africa, and obviously an investment here in Oregon. The question I would have is, you chose Oregon to locate your wave energy division of your company. What is special about Oregon when you compare these other places around the world where you've got wave energy and investments?
Another good question. I'll say the manufacturing community absolutely begged for us to come here. The Oregon Innovation, this initiative, the Wave Energy Initiative, provides some assistance in permitting and infrastructure, which potential hurdles to the development of wave energy. So that we see as a big assist. You know, we need to have the opportunity to build a park of some size that lets us get to the economies of scale that'll drive the price down. In other parts of the world, there hasn't been the same kind of assistance offered that the state seems to be prepared to offer for us here. And you know, as an emerging industry with really, frankly, limited resources, we need that kind of help to get us past those hurdles that are really regulatory in nature. I'll say certainly the wave resource is a good one here, and you know, and Oregon State University's great research is part of what brought Oregon, you know, what made Oregon leap off the map for us as well.
Thank you. Sorry for the distraction.
Good, thank you. But good job. One less spider. Thank you, gentlemen.
It started down here.
It started down there. Well,
it went all the way in the right.
Everything has a lifespan. we're going to ask Norm Eater to come up to discuss manufacturing. And then we're going to get to the best group, which will be 580, and we have someone test to sign up in opposition to that, so I'm just giving you a flow of how we're going to do things here so we can get everybody on. So, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, and the committee. My name is Norm Eder. I'm here representing Manufacturing 21 Coalition. I serve as their executive director, and we are here in support of this entire package. But my role is to address the manufacturing part of this. And the manufacturers of this state, and I was pleased to see the connection made for all of us between the previous panel and this presentation, because manufacturing is a critical part of this state's economy. I'll give you just two numbers to contemplate. Manufacturers in this state represent 12% of all employment in the state, and we represent 20% of all of the family wage jobs in this state of $41,000 or more, according to the Oregon Employment Division. Oregon, Inc., we're pleased to say, has included manufacturing in its innovation roadmap. Our companies, the companies that I represent and manufacturing companies across this state, are innovators. And as part of this package, Oregon Inc. has recommended $3.375 million for new investment in university faculty in support of manufacturing. And part of that will go to an increase, doubling of the Oregon Metals Initiative. The elements of this package came together by industry. The companies of Manufacturing 21 Coalition a year ago invested in research on to find and identify common themes, technology themes, with across companies. We have a very diverse industry who compete against each other every day. So it was, in fact, quite unusual for these companies to lay aside proprietary issues and other things to talk about their technology and what their common technologies were. And we came up with a list of priorities that stretch broadly across industry. And the three new faculty positions that are represented in the $2.375 million piece of this request are, in fact, faculty positions defined by industry working with our university partners. And they will bring us new capacity in areas which are critical to Oregon's manufacturers and our ability to compete internationally. First, manufacturing process development, including sustainable and green manufacturing and energy efficiency. These are critical issues for our members. Materials characterization, surface engineering, welding, joining, and alloy design, including nano applications. Again, a new faculty position designed by industry to provide capability within the Oregon University system in these areas. And then finally, seismic and dynamic load effects on structures, both large and small. The previous panel talked about wave energy and devices that will be off the coast generating energy. These are large devices that are going to be subject to the full forces of nature. And in fact, the capability to test those things at an industrial scale is exactly what Oregon needs. Here are some quick examples of how these topics, these three new faculty positions that we've defined, are not, I apologize for the pun, academic topics for our companies. Manufacturing components for the aircraft industry is a big business in Oregon. It's something that we often overlook. Boeing Gresham is, in fact, one of the crown jewels of the Boeing company and represents state-of-the-art machining technology. Other companies like Silver Eagle Manufacturing, ATI Huacheng, Leupold Stevens are all companies that face challenges with regards to customers who demand that they produce their products in an environmentally sound and sustainable way. This means coatings and full range of technologies that have to be applied to these products. They need to be tested and certified. And clearly, this is something that these companies need help and support in terms of R&D and the technology development, because they need also to perform at world-class scales and world-class standards, or else they're not going to be competitive and bring a premium the kind of premium that our companies want to charge for their products. Secondly, we're home of companies who make and use products in some of the world's harshest climates, companies like Northwest Pipe, ESCO, Oregon Iron. And then I'll add ADEC to that, a company you wouldn't think about it, but they make dental tools. And dental tools function in a very harsh and difficult climate. Ask any dentist. And extremes of heat and cold take their toll on products. And so the capability of understanding how products are able to perform in these climates is terribly important. And these are very complicated scientific questions having to do with surface engineering and materials characterization and alloys and joining and welding. Finally, the third faculty area we've identified is directed towards an ordinary thing, vibration and stress and strain put on materials and products out in the environment. Companies like Gunderson, Cascade Rolling Mills, Oregon Iron and Wire, Marks Metal Technology, Blount, all make products that are subject to vibration. All make products that are subject to the destructive forces of use. And we need the capability of being able to build products which we're able to continue to produce, continue to work under very severe use environments. And again, these are capabilities that we look to the Oregon University system to help in, and they are applied technologies that are absolutely vital to our companies. The last element of this request is a doubling of the Oregon Metals Initiative. This is a long-standing program. It's nearly, I think, more than 15 years old. But it's very unique in terms of the way in which Oregon has funded technology development. This is a matching grant program that provides currently, I believe, $1 million in the current biennium. We're asking for $2 million. The money is leveraged only when a real company with a real technology challenge joins with a faculty member within the Oregon University system and says, I will put my money on the table to leverage the state money to develop a joint R&D project to solve my problem. We think this is a terrific model. We think it's a very successful model that's helped many companies across the state, and we advocate, and we're very pleased that Oregon Inc. Also advocates the doubling of these programs.
Mr. Eater, I'm going to break you off there. We had a real privilege to have you, Mr. Eater, here talking about Manufacturing 21, and your next group's going to have to leave in 10 minutes. So I do appreciate the enthusiasm and passion about that, and for particularly giving us some clarification now in terms of how these university positions would support some of the material that we heard earlier. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much.
I'd like the best group to come forward. I think Gail Ackerman and Rob Miller. And this one is specific to Senate Bill 580.
Yes, sir. Chair Metzger, members of the committee, my name is Gail Ackerman. I'm the director of the Institute for Natural Resources at Oregon State University and also work in the research office as a special advisor to the Vice President for Research. And with me today is Rob Miller from Mount Jefferson Farms. It's a privilege to be here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 580. As Mr. Chen advised you earlier, this was a very competitive process with industry representatives and people from throughout the Oregon University system really trying to come together to say, where does Oregon have a competitive advantage? Where does our research excellence match up with our industry excellence, where Oregon can really grow new businesses and create jobs? Signature research centers really build the capacity for innovation within the state and create leadership for the future. They create new processes for next generation products through research. And I think the example that everybody thinks of here is the research that went on at Stanford University that then fostered the development of basically what the Silicon Valley. That kind of spinoff coming from research investments is the economic development model that signature research centers build on, and you'll hear more about the first signature research center in Oregon when you hear about Onami from Skip Rung in a few moments. Michael Porter, speaking 2 years ago to the Oregon Business Leadership Summit, noted how known Oregon is for sustainability, for renewable energy, for environmental quality, and identified it as a key competitive advantage, that brand for Oregon. But we also realized when we started talking to faculty throughout the system that the incredible research talent that we have, and then we started talking to the agricultural industry, the forest industry, the architectural industry and services industry, the energy industry around the state, and we realized this was a perfect focal area for a new signature research center on bioeconomy and sustainable technology, where we could create new products and new services with an initial focus around bioproducts, renewable energy, and green buildings. This is a startup. It's $3 million would be requested for this initiative to get it started. The focus will be initially on biofuels and bioproducts. If you want to know what a bioproduct is in most people's terms, our best example of it is one that's already been developed at Oregon State University in the Forest Research Lab, where one of the faculty members in the College of Forestry developed a soy-based adhesive to substitute for the very, very hazardous adhesives, petroleum-based adhesives that have traditionally been used in plywood. Well, there's a tremendous opportunity to do more work on substituting these biological-based products for petrochemical products in a vast array of areas that hopefully Mr. Miller will give you some additional examples. Similarly, there are tremendous opportunities to develop green products to put in green buildings, and again build markets for Oregon forest industry, Oregon agriculture, and other Oregon businesses. So the partners in this initiative include Oregon State University, Portland State University, the University of Oregon, Pacific Northwest National Laboratories, and the Oregon Institute of Technologies, and we are working with absolutely a wealth of private companies that are investing now in renewable energy in various ways and also in bioproducts and sustainable technologies, who really want to partner with the university faculty to identify critical research needs and then have the researchers tackle those and hopefully develop the new products like soy-based adhesive. With that, I'll turn it over to Rob Miller from Mount Jefferson Farms.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Gail. Thank you, Senator Metzger, and rest of the committee. I'll try to keep it brief, and I thought a lot about how I might be able to approach this a little bit differently rather than just technology, so I'm going to break my comments into two sections. One is, I thought, those of you who might not know, that there really has been a lot more thought in the BEST process and the whole signature center than just the last year, just the last 2 years. It's actually been 15 years that folks like myself and Gail Achterman have worked on the subject since the advent of the Oregon Science Council after Governor Goldschmidt appointed that group. And it's interesting, if you look back on that, to see that a lot of the same strategic advantages that Oregon has are the same ones listed today. That clicks in my mind and says there's some substantiation of the current models that have been put forward. Briefly, some of the differences between that science council and the iterations between then and now, which a lot of us have been constantly involved with, is the current model has great business planning. It has accountability and measurement built into it. It's got a reevaluation and resubstantiation of the goals, strategic advantages. It's got an integrated cross-systems approach in the seven centers. It's got funding, or it's proposed to have funding, and it's proposed to have staff. And I thought it might be interesting for me to say to you that there's an awful lot here that is more than would meet the eye, and it's passed a lot of tests, my opinion only. Secondly, what about our company? Well, our company operates under Mount Jefferson Farms, which is a large farming operation on both sides of the mountain. It operates under Roberts Agroforestry, which is agriculture and forestry technology combined. It operates under Miller Forest, which is a conventional timber and a biomass-related operation, and it operates under Environmental Plant Systems, which does restoration work on both sides of the mountains and has created a lot of jobs because of that. The point probably is that we may not be exactly typical of most farms, but I would like to say that I think we're much more typical than people would realize, in that the common theme in all of this is we need clean energy. We deal with it every day. In our case, we try to produce it. We are very interested in bio-based products, and I call the restoration, bioengineering, phytoremediation, all of the other technological things we do as bio-based products, and they really are that. Biofuels is something we're very interested in because we produce biomass, which I'll explain in a minute, but we also have a tremendous grass straw residue problem, and when you combine the technology of the forests and you combine the technology of agriculture and straw, you've got a wonderful opportunity for the state of Oregon. Some of the things that we're doing and have done in the past years, we've done a large carbon sequestering project, and I'm trying to give you a flavor of opportunities here that are real, that we've actually participated in and have been profitable for us and created family wage jobs. We participated in a large carbon sequestering project that involved our company and partners on the east side of the mountains. We are producing biomass currently, and are involved with some projects, hopefully with the Sun Grant Initiative over at Oregon State University, which is a fabulous fit and a huge source of money, ultimately, for the kind of things we'd like to do. We have research plots in mustards, canola, soybeans, rape, sunflowers, metafoam, others. We've produced essential oils from all of these. We've done work with Jerusalem artichokes. We are producing biomass currently in cellulosic ways. We're doing that profitably, not because we're selling them into energy, but we're taking products off of those and putting them into bioengineering and stream bank restoration, which is water quality, which is the state of Oregon, which everything has to have. I think in summary, what I would like to say is that I have a short list, which I won't bore you with, of my standards on what a signature center should do. At the top of that list, it has to be a One Oregon project. It has to benefit all parts of the state of Oregon. I call that One Oregon. Others call it Rural Oregon Connection. That's got, has to be the key of everything that we do, and I think the opportunities are unending, and I can give you a list of 50, but I won't bore you with those either, of what those might be. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. What I'm going to do is, I appreciate your testimony, and but I would, you know, hate to have everybody who's been sitting real hard to tell us about their thing and not have an opportunity to do that. So rather than go to questions at the moment, I'm going to ask that Aaron, if I butcher the name, I apologize, Pradhan, Bob Monahan, Skip Young, and Kathy Miller now come forward and talk about the other components of this bill. So we can get that on. We're going to talk to someone who'd like to talk against, and then keep in mind we have food processing and seafood and accelerator, and I can't guarantee you'll be on. So that puts the pressure on those who are now coming up to see that they have an opportunity in the next 30 minutes to do that.
I hope you did it in our five.
Thank you very much. You did an excellent job. It's wonderful, by the way, to see all the enthusiasm and passion, and but when we have large panels, sometimes more is not always better, so keep that in mind.
Senator Metzger, committee members, my name is Bob Monahan. I'm representing the Oregon Translational Research and Drug Development Institute, or known as OTRADI.
And thank you, by the way, for doing that. For people who are at home and watching this, and we're hearing all these acronyms, and they don't know what the heck BEST is and everything else with NAMI, so thank you for doing that. We got to keep in mind other people are wondering, what the heck are they talking about? Are they BEST foods or something, or what? Go ahead. Thank you.
All right. So on OTRADI, the Translational Signature Research Institute, I'm the representative for that, representing four universities. I've asked Mr. Arun Pradhan from OHSU's Director of Technology and Licensing to join me today. He's one member of the consortium. I thought maybe I'd just give you a quick background. I have over 30 years of experience in healthcare and biotechnology, particularly life science. I've worked for American Hospital Supply, as well as Sigma-Aldrich in biotechnology and healthcare, run divisions, and been CEO of a number of startup companies. I looked at the OTRADI as a terrific opportunity here for Oregon. I've listened to a number of the comments that have come up. particularly in venture capital. I have worked and consulted for Moore David Dow Ventures in the Bay Area and looking at new investments in technology, particularly in pharmaceuticals, medical device and diagnostics, or the biomarker area. In looking at that, I believe that the Otrati opportunity here for Oregon is a what I call a force multiplier for the economy. Right now, you have four major universities that have significant research going on, but yet has not cohesed together to support the infectious disease research. Infectious diseases kill a lot of people every year. I can tell you that from experience from my military background. I can tell you that from a healthcare background. And I can tell you from the biotechnology sector in supporting the public health. There are probably over 60 infectious diseases today that represent the majority of it. Many of you have heard of avian flu, but there's also HIV, which is still prominent, as well as other viral infections. The universities here in Oregon have about $80 million worth of research currently going into this initiative. You also have about 20 prominent scientists doing research in infectious diseases, and that's spread across the four universities. So in looking at Otrati, I believe that you have the core competency here to develop another biotech sector in infectious diseases using this vehicle to create jobs, to improve healthcare, and to get new technology out. The way that's going to work is that you would have all the infectious disease, and that's in essence like an institute. That institute then would collapse all of their products into Otrati. And that would be a pass-through on the IP. It would then go on to a for-profit company for commercialization and attraction of capital for that technology that's spun off for the therapeutics. The goal here is to have Otrati and the spinoff self-sustaining within 5 years. So it would be revenue neutral to positive in cash flow. And it's a, you know, so we're looking at the biennium ask for this funding. And I think that you have a great shot at it. And why specifically do I think that? I went back and we met with the four universities. We talked to a lot of scientists and said, you know, tell us what you have in compounds that we would put into here to get new therapeutics out. Well, we roughly think we have 2,000 or 3,000. When we came down to it, we have 7,000 synthetic compounds that are unique to Oregon, and we have 3,000 natural compounds. So and that's the initial screen coming out of the three universities. So we think that there's sustainability here. We think there's a real product flow where we can adapt these products into Otrati to create new jobs and new technology developments for therapeutics.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, thank you. I represent the academic...
State your name, please.
My name is Arundhati Pradhan, the Director for Technology and Research Collaborations at Oregon Health and Science University. Representing the academic perspective on this collaboration, as Bob pointed out earlier, what this really provides is an infrastructure, and that is another thread that you've seen through all of the initiatives that have been presented here today. This initiative provides an infrastructure for research collaborations between the four academic institutions in Oregon. It coalesces the infectious disease research, and a lot of this infectious disease research is very important right now from the perspective of not only a greater number of multi-drug resistant pathogens that are emerging, but also the creep of pathogens into areas where they normally haven't been. If you take a look at the pharmaceutical side of what's happening, the companies are actually pulling away from infectious disease research for various reasons. They're concentrating on some of the high-profile pathogens like HIV, maybe SARS, flu, but flu is a moving target every year. And so this represents an opportunity where we can capitalize on the existing research base. It provides a mechanism to develop these technologies further, not only in the terms of therapeutics, but also vaccines, diagnostics, and biomarkers for these diseases. It also enables us to work with faculty to develop platform technologies for the early detection of these diseases, and provides an accelerator / incubator structure around which we can then create a consortium of VCs as well as investment from the OGA, as you heard before, to really seed fund the entities that are coming out of the accelerator. And those would be based primarily in the areas of therapeutics, diagnostics, biomarkers.
Thank you. Any questions before we move on? Just a moment. Thank you very much, and thank you for being considerate here. I'm going to ask a representative from food processing, one from seafood, and one from the accelerator catalyst, which are the last three parts of this 581, to come forward. And then we're going to hear from Mr. Buckstein.
Skip. Wrong.
Okay. And skip. I'm sorry. Sorry.
Oh, not me.
We're going to go till 10 till, and then we'll have Mr. Buckstein. So we have 17 minutes for those groups that I mentioned. Welcome.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, thank you very much for the chance to be here today. My name is Skip Rung. I'm the president and executive director of Oregon Nanoscience and Microtechnologies Institute. And with me today is Kathy Miller, who is a business development director at Hewlett-Packard. ONAMI is Oregon's first signature research center, as you know, and we are already reaping the results of a sound strategy and a sound investment framework. I always try to say too much in too short a time, so I'll skip over a little bit to how we do it and just talk about the results that we've achieved. So first of all, we have two key goals. The first is to increase research revenues from outside the state into the state of Oregon. In fiscal year 04, the members of our collaboration brought in $9 million in external research grants and awards. In fiscal year 06, that figure was $25 million, and it's still growing. Most of this came from the federal government, but in the most recent quarter, 25% of it came from private industry, which was one of our other goals to see that grow. So there's been great leverage in terms of money in. There's been at least $15 million in private contribution to the facilities and other activities that support the ONAMI research at our participating universities. The other thing that is absolutely critical for us is to commercialize that technology. So to emphasize commercializable research and to do what is necessary to reap the results of that research in Oregon. So we have a program just launched for gap funding that requires that there be a researcher who is working with an already formed company, and that company is seeking growth capital from private venture capital firms. We have made two of those grants, one of them to a company called Home Dialysis Plus, actually to Oregon State University working with them, and another one to University of Oregon working with a company by the name of Crystal Clear Technologies. Both of them are, as we speak, talking to venture capital groups in Silicon Valley, New York City, and other places, and are serious candidates for multi-million dollar A rounds of investment. They don't have them yet. We hope that's imminent, but that's exactly the sort of thing we want to see. We've only been at this for about 4 months. In addition to that, we provided facility space to three companies that are working with our researchers, ranging from biofuels, trillium fiber fuels, to very high-performance sensors and photovoltaics. That company, Voxtel, will be operating in 1,500 square feet of research collaboration space in the brand-new integrated science facility at University of Oregon, which is the ONAMI signature research facility there. We have been involved in joint proposals with other Oregon companies to private foundations and to federal sources with at least three proposals that I can think of, and then we've engaged in valuable networking and contact establishment with at least 11 more companies, some of which have gotten very favorable trade show space and opportunities to promote themselves and their products to investors and to customers outside the state. What's unique about our implementation framework that makes this possible is that we have a true academic collaboration that works, and people around the country will tell you that's somewhat of a rare beast. It's difficult to do, but we found because of the new relationships, the new ideas that would not have happened anyway, and because of the increased leverage in securing federal funds that it's worked very well and people are enjoying it very much, and so I think the other Signature Research Center initiatives are going to enjoy that benefit as well. The second thing is that we are pooling our resources in facilities at the universities, and we're going to trademark something called the Northwest NanoNet that allows people at a distance to use these facilities, allows all researchers at the same cost and access terms to get into these facilities, and these facilities will also support the work of startup companies. Venture capital investors don't want their startup companies to spend large amounts of money on their own equipment when it's possible to get access to infrastructure in universities. This is something that we've heard firsthand is appreciated and exciting to foundations like the Kauffman Foundation and to venture capital investors. Then the final thing is that in addition to our GAP fund, we are participating, we are assisting in the raising of an accelerator fund called NMAX, which will be a critical piece of early stage capital, such as you talked about earlier in the hearing, in putting in place one more missing piece that we need to attract the later stage venture capital to Oregon. So I thank you for the chance to be here. Would be happy to answer questions, and I'd like to introduce Kathy, too.
Well, thank you, and thank you for the historical perspective, because as you've heard questions here and previously, we'd like to know the stuff that we've done, some reflection that it is actually achieving what we had asked for. So that was very helpful. Welcome.
Thank you. Senator Metzger and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kathy Miller. I've been with Hewlett-Packard for 30 years. I've actually been a resident of Oregon for 32 years. There were some early school time before I got employed with HP. I'm actually here. I have my total comments in front of you in print. What I want to really highlight for you is that why is HP committed to Onami? And I'll start first by stating that it's with the global economy being where it is today, it is impossible for a company even the size of Hewlett-Packard to be the sole investor in any kind of research and development. For the last 10 years, we've had to learn how to collaborate globally as well as with the universities. So HP Corvallis has been in Corvallis for 30 years, or greater than 30 years, and has been a research partner with Oregon State through that entire time. Onami has enabled us, because of the collaboration efforts across the university system, we can now easily collaborate across that entire university system in those fields that we're most interested in, which is nanoscience and microelectronics. Secondarily, the results that we get out of this is thus far we've already licensed technology from two of the universities. It's not in manufacturing yet, but you're getting some reward through that licensing. The other element that has also been very critical is that HP has a value system that says when the economy is healthy, our business is usually healthy. And when our employees have some competitive nature, when they can come in and we can recruit top employees to our area because there's choices for them to make with other companies. The research dollars that Onami is starting to receive both federally and locally, along with private grants from companies like Intel and Hewlett-Packard, they've now recruited two top researchers. That alone has enabled us to recruit some top scientists and engineers for our efforts. The other element that we're really concerned about is that you can stay in research for a long time. You got to get into development. You got to get into technology development and into the creation of new businesses. So to further put our money where our mouth is about a year ago, I became dedicated to a job title called Technology and Business Integration, but specifically economic development. The short answer for that is my responsibility is to look for ways for HP's capability, and it's pretty vast at that site. I will say is we're experts in high-volume manufacturing. 1 million a month is some talent, and we're trying to find startups that are ready in the state of Oregon that can take advantage of that knowledge. The net result is I've licensed some technology to some of the very companies that Skip has talked to. So bottom line is, as a resident of Oregon and as a taxpayer, as well as an employee of Hewlett-Packard, we believe it's been a great investment. Your dollar has recruited about $8 million from Hewlett-Packard, and that doesn't include the donation of Building 11. We have recruited some top talent to the state as a result of that investment. So thank you, and please continue it.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, and for that background. Congratulations on your great quarter, by the way. I saw on the Wall Street.
He's looking good.
For the next 6 minutes, I'm going to ask that, and I'm sorry, but I don't want to miss out on your testimony. I need one person from food processing and one from seafood, because we're going to go for 6 minutes. Then I'm going to ask Mr. Buckstein to speak, and then we're going to finish with Mr. Wally Van Valkenburg. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Rick Fish. I'm here representing the Northwest Food Processors Association. And first of all, I want to thank you for this opportunity to be before you today. You have our handout. It's very nicely designed. Mm-hmm. It's well laid out. It's chock full of information. So I'm going to hit about 3 points, and then I'm out of here.
Thank you. And I do appreciate the written testimony. It's very helpful.
First of all, not going into the industry importance and so on, you have all of that. The mission of the center, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the Innovation and Productivity Center, which is one of the vital elements of the Oregon Innovation Plan, is the establishment of the Northwest Food Processors Innovation and Productivity Center. The mission of the center is to enhance the innovation and productivity capabilities of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho food processors and its supporting infrastructure to revitalize the $21 billion industry. The underlying objective is to significantly advance overall competitiveness, expanding our economic base while retaining and or increasing jobs. There's two winning strategies any organization is looking for. Number one, you want to go out there and do something that nobody else is doing, preferably. That's innovation. That's differentiation. The other thing is, if you don't do that, you want to go out and do something better than anybody else, and that's being efficient in your input conversions. That's productivity. So hence, the three areas that this center is really based on and what we're focusing on very hard is innovation, productivity, and then the glue that puts those two together, which is workforce pipelining, making sure you have the people that can do that. We're basing this on proven business models that will be utilized by a professional staff of about 10 individuals, and operations will focus on placing IPC advisors in the field to bring innovation and productivity improvements into the processing plants. We'll do plant assessments, we'll do plan development, implementations, and install rigorous productivity measurements. The IPC will also be a clearing house for information technical resources and advisors, linking the industry needs to existing private and public providers. Advisors will also shape training programs with a particular focus on continual productivity improvement and an open curiosity towards innovation. We have some rather high-level outcomes and associated ROIs for these efforts, and if you were to take our handout, turn it over, last page, upper right-hand corner, you'll see a graph there with five lines on it. The plant productivity interventions that we're basing our savings and our ROIs on, and we're doing that simply because productivity savings and interventions are much more predictable than innovations, although we know we're going to get innovation gains also. But this is based on doing 15 plant interventions the first year, 25 year two and thereafter, and the Innovation Council asked us to put a bracket of 2% on the or bracket our savings, and we selected 2% on the lower end and 5% on the upper end of variable manufacturing costs. Those five lines that you see on that chart represent 1 through 5% savings. If you were to draw a horizontal line around the $4 million mark, anything above that would literally be your return on investment for what we're doing. So the gains from productivity enhancements for participating companies are calculated to be between $2 million and $5 million. Again, the 2 and 5% brackets for year one. And by the way, if you look at the investment, the total funded budget that we're looking at, that is a return on investment of 51 to 267%. So we are putting money back in your pocket. The two-year savings are projected between $4 million and $9 million. Again, the 2 and 5% windows. The ROI on that varies between 76% and an unbelievable, but we're confident about it, 329%. So in summary, we're confident, energized, and excited about the positive impact that we can have on our industry, and we respectfully request your support.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Great. Good afternoon, Chairman Metzger and the committee. I'm going to try to be as succinct.
Identify yourself first.
Pardon?
identify yourself.
Yes, I will. My name is Diane Moody. I am the director of the Community Seafood Initiative, which is headquartered at the Seafood Consumer Center in Astoria, Oregon, and is staffed and governed by Coastal Oregon Marine Experiment Station, Oregon Sea Grant, Oregon State University Seafood Lab, seafood harvesters and processors, and the largest community development finance institution, which is located in Ilwaukee, Washington, Shorebank Enterprise, Cascadia. What's unique about this, and what I think is very important to continue to support, is the fact that we have brought a range of resources together for easy access for seafood businesses to be able to adapt innovative strategies in not only management of the resource, but management of the business and thinking about market strategies. We have been established since 2002, and our initial funder, which is the Kellogg Foundation, has noted us as a national model to look to for university and capital coming together to support innovation in rural communities. With your continued support of the Oregon Innovation Plan, that would allow us to continue to grow our effort and bring in new partners, specifically Portland State University and its dedication to market access. It will also allow us to create a new link with the Northwest Food Processors Association and their energy in figuring out efficiencies and innovation, as well as continuing to do our effort with new research projects through Coastal Oregon Marine Experiment Station and Oregon State University Seafood Lab, which has demonstrated results in implementation in the seafood industry, which, as we all know, is a very, very important part to the Oregon economy and our reputation nationally and worldwide. So with that, I'm going to stop and really ask you to support our plan.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that very much, because I just think it's very important to hear from everyone, and we have this volume. I didn't want anybody to be left out. And also appreciate the written testimony very much. And our committee heard a lot on food processing last year, and I think there are some other questions we may have down the road. Thank you very much. Mr. Buckstein, you want to come forward, and then our final testimony will be by Mr. Van Valkenburg. And I believe you have some written testimony to submit.
I do. Oops.
And then give us an oral summary would be great.
You don't want me to read the whole book on the subject?
No, I knew you'd be skilled not to. But I do appreciate you writing it.
Chair Metzger and members of the committee, my name is Steve Buckstein. I am Senior Policy Analyst and founder of Cascade Policy Institute, which is a public policy research center based in Portland. Directing the Oregon Innovation Council to establish signature research centers is poor public policy, in my opinion, because politics is simply an inferior way to decide what should be researched and who should fund that research. I've given you some examples on the back of my written testimony, some source documents, that's what I won't go into, that basically identifies some spectacular failures of government research that you may be familiar with, and some sources discussing how basic research done by the private sector correlates better with economic growth than does government-funded research. Government-funded research relies on what I believe are the wrong incentives. I know that the Oregon Investment Council members and the people that have spoken to you today are very bright people, they're very smart people, but again, when they come together in a government created organization like Oregon Inc., again, the incentives aren't there. They won't lose any personal funds if their projects that are chosen by the centers, the signature centers or the Oregon Inc., fail. On the other side, if they succeed, they won't benefit directly financially. That's seen as one of the strengths when they talk about it, but it's actually a weakness in terms of finding the best investments for Oregon's growth. I think human nature being what it is, they simply have less incentive than people investing their own money in the private sector to get the best return on the dollars and the best growth in this case, in Oregon's economy. Determining what innovations will help Oregon's economy thrive should be a function of science and economics, not politics. I'm reminded that the name Governor Goldschmidt came up here earlier with the Oregon Science Council, and I'm reminded of a statement that the then former governor made in July of 1995. It was in this building, and it was the House Interim Task Force on Light Rail. They were hearing from some experts, some national experts, about why Portland area light rail may not have lived up to its expectations, to its promises. And the University of Southern California economist, James Moore, testified that there were better and much cheaper ways to solve the congestion problem in the Portland area. And he went on to talk about the newly emerging technology of transponders and what we now know to be called congestion pricing. The professor made what I thought was a convincing case, a convincing scientific and economic case, that this was better technology than light rail. But Governor Goldschmidt, who was then the co-chair of the task force, spoke up and he said, quote, "Professor, the technology is way ahead of the politics here," unquote. And I thought to myself, you're right, Governor, a lot of things are way ahead of politics. And I'm afraid that you have the same problem here today. Technology, the kind of things that you're hearing about, is moving much faster than the political system is designed to move. You heard some very good ideas from some potentially very good industries for Oregon, but you didn't hear about a lot of other good ideas that aren't going to make it into the discussion that could be even better. You don't know, and these people behind you don't know, what the best returns, the best investments to make in Oregon are. You're making decisions, for example, about whether the word technology should be in the law or not. These are artificial constructs that politics puts in the way of good, in my view, of good economic development. So no matter how hard Oregon Inc. and everyone here and everyone in the legislature tries to facilitate the development of new technologies, this is still, with all due respect, a political animal, not a market-driven animal. You won't be, and Oregon Inc. won't be as nimble as the scientists and the investors who are investing their own money in getting it right for Oregon. So rather than create new government-sponsored research centers, I suggest that the legislature should help Oregon's economy move forward and technology improve by removing some of the political barriers that have been created through politics that keep innovation from happening more rapidly here in Oregon. Examples were already mentioned by one member here. Reduce income taxes, especially reduce capital gains taxes, so that you will attract innovators and investors to Oregon, and so that you will keep them here once they're here, so they don't move out as soon as they make a profit, taking their jobs and their creativity with them, rather than pay the high capital gains taxes. I think these kind of moves would be much more important to Oregon's economy, to innovation, to technology, than the kind of measures that you're talking about today. And I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Mr. Buckstein, thank you very, very much. And you heard by the door opening that the next committee's coming, so thank you, Mr. Buckstein. Mr. Van Valkenburg, and I'm pleased we've got all of our bases covered as a result of this. And thank you all for being considerate of the time of each other.
Senator Max.
Concluding remarks.
Committee members, for the record, my name's Wally Van Valkenburg. I'm a lawyer with Stoll Reeves Law Firm in Portland. I'm also the chair of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Commission, and in that role I sit as an ex officio member of the Oregon Innovation Council. I do have some prepared remarks, which I will get to you in writing, that deal with a particular component of the innovation plan, but I think it is appropriate, given the time and the position I have on your agenda, to make a few closing remarks. This has been, to me, an incredible example of how Oregon can do things working together that we can't do without the kind of collaboration you've seen here. We've had a representation from all over the state, from higher education, from the private sector, from the public sector, working together to come up with the proposals you've heard about today. I'm reminded of something that a consultant told my law firm when we were going through a strategic planning process, which is, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Is this plan perfect in every way? No, there are some things that we probably could pursue if we had more time and if we had unlimited resources. But what we've tried to do, and I think what we've done successfully, is we have been very selective about those initiatives that we're recommending to you. To Senator George's question earlier, I think what you're seeing is the kind of collaboration between the private sector and the public sector that you want to see to move the economy forward. In my role as chair of the Economic Development Commission, I've seen a lot of things that we've done to try to create jobs here. We've tried to recruit businesses. We've tried to invest in infrastructure. To me, the things that you're hearing about today are among the most important things we can do as a state to make this the kind of place where we'll have the kind of jobs that I'd like to see my children be able to compete for in the global economy. We're not competing anymore against Washington, California, Idaho. We're competing against China, India, Western Europe, for the jobs that will be the winners in the decades to come. This is all about investment now to have those kinds of jobs for future generations. I appreciate all the time you've had, you've given us. Be happy to answer any questions, but those would be my closing comments.
Thank you very much. And again, not only any written testimony or others that in the audience would like to provide that, I know the committee would be very interested in looking at those. So thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bills 579, 580, and 581. What I would like to do, colleagues, is hold Senate Bill 579 and Senate Bill 580 for further discussion on some of the specifics. But I would like to open a work session on Senate Bill 581, which has a referral to Ways and Means, which is basically, is anything going to be funded? And you have an opportunity for at least to see what the financial picture is, if that's the desire of the committee.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Decker.
I'd like to move Senate Bill 581 to Ways and Means with a do-pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Deckard has moved Senate Bill 581 be sent to the Ways and Means Committee with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion on that.
Well,
Senator Monsanto.
I wish that we really had had time to talk a little bit more about the policy. I'm sorry that this was such a rushed deal today. I had lots of questions. I wanted to know about funding faculty positions, and is this the norm? There were just some policy issues I wish we had time to discuss. I'm definitely in favor of these concepts. I like a little bit more information regarding the return that we get. We give money to corporations. Do we actually, and everyone says we get a 10-to-1, but is that for the corporation or is that for the state? There were a number of questions I had, and I'm sorry that we couldn't have had maybe 2 days to do this rather than one.
It is voluminous for as we move it through the process, and I do appreciate that. Anybody else have that thought? Senator George.
I just basically want to say that some of the folks that are in favor of the program have come in and talked to me, and they've committed, at least to me, that there would be some rigorous accountability proposals built into this. And so I just want to encourage folks who are working on this, make sure that legislature has that feedback into the future, because I think that's really important for us to make a commitment like this. And so I'll be supportive. I just want to make sure that those accountability measures that were discussed with me in my office are a commitment that those involved in this project go forward with and really come back to legislature with some commitment on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Stark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just note that in Senate Bill 581, we are still talking about traded sector industries listed in this bill.
I noticed that.
And I, you know, for whatever good there is there, I think that's still an important term. I also have had a number of conversations in the last couple of days regarding this suite of bills, and I've asked for additional information and expect that I will receive it, particularly on the rationale that goes into the projected jobs that are supposed to be created by these investments. And I'd like to get some better data as it relates to that. I'll support the motion to send the bill to Ways and Means.
Okay. Well, I tell you what. I'm just going to make a chair's decision. That's okay with you. Senator Deckard, next Wednesday is open for us. Since we are the policy, and I know people are supportive, but there's some questions, I would just feel better because we had
sure.
a lot of material
sure.
that's very positive, is to have those questions answered rather than take the risk of having them to be answered in Ways and Means. So I appreciate the motion, Senator Deckard, but would you be willing to withdraw your motion?
Oh, I've never done this. Withdraw my motion on my – I will – withdraw the motion to move Senate Bill 581 to Ways and Means and hope to make it on Wednesday of next week.
So thank you, Senator Deckard. Senator Deckard has moved to withdraw his motion, and if there's no objection to that, it will be so done. And what I will say is we will put the bill on next Wednesday at 581, but what I would like to do for work session is to those questions, and some of the members have talked individually. I know you all have done a wonderful job. But I think that would be very, very important to take that opportunity to discuss with members of the committee some of the questions they had. And Senator Mona Sanderson and others were maybe in a less pressured environment on some of the specific issues. We'll have a group discussion about those, whether those that comfort zone of the policy has been done, and then advance the bill at that point. Is that okay? Thank you all for just a very, very enlightening day. I know it was rushed because there's so much there, but we all appreciate, I think I speak for the committee, your hard work in trying to do the right thing for Oregon business and moving our economy forward. And we could spend a whole committee easily on each of these sections. I know you have spent tireless hours on them trying to convey them to us in a few minutes. So we appreciate that. We'll bring the bill back next week. We'll close the work session on 581, and we're adjourned.